Hi, this is Jeff Sachs from Atid and the Web Yeshiva with another episode of our Masechet Ta'anit. We are closing in on the end of the perek. We're closing in on the end of the first perek of Ta'anit. We'll have some kind of virtual siyum when we do, I suppose. I don't know what that means. I'm sorry, one second, please. You should be able to get in regular. Period. Everyone else is there. Yeah. Okay, so here, Masechet Ta'anit, I want to discuss something that we had gotten onto the topic of last week, and then I exchanged a couple emails with Yehudi in the intervening week, and he raised a question. The Braisa on Daf Yud Daled that we saw asks a question about the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said that we're matri'in, we sound the alarm on fast days. The conclusion was on the third set of ta'aniyot. One opinion says that that means that we blow a truah. Matri'in is from the lashon of teruah, of the shofar, the sound that we are familiar with from the tkiat shofar. Another shita says that the matri'in, the hatra'ah, the sounding the alarm, is the alarm in prayer that we say, we insert the anenu when we daven on those fast days. In addition, the conclusion of the Gemara was that it's in addition to the blowing the shofar. So the two opinions are, is the matri'in mean shofar, or does it mean a combination of prayer, anenu, and sounding of the shofar? How do we know that it's the shofar? So the Gemara seems to, I don't know whether it derives it or it points to it, says the siman is Yericho. Just like when the Jews entered Eretz Yisrael and conquered Yericho with Yehoshua ben Nun, they blew the shofar for 7 days, as circling Yericho. So the 7 days of fast in that third round of fasts constitute or involve the blowing of the shofar in our times of distress when we do those fasts. So the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah is a fairly well known Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. Here's the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. This is Daf Kaf Vav Amud Bet in Rosh Hashanah. So the Mishnah says that, yeah, Yehudi, you're waving your hand. Yehudi, we can't hear you. You have to unmute yourself. Yehudi, you're talking. We can't hear you. You have to unmute yourself. But unless it's something.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Had you wanted to say something?
No, I just wanted to hear what you have to say about the Mishnah.
Okay, well, I'm about to say it, but you were waving your hand around, so I thought you had something to say.
I was just getting the page to blow up.
I see. Okay. So the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah says, B'taniyot, the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, of course, is dealing with the Tkiat Shofar of Rosh Hashanah, but it's also aware that the Shofar was used on other occasions as well. And the Mishnah says, B'taniyot b'shel zecharim k'fufin, ufien mitzupin kesef, u'shtei chatzotzrot be'emtza, Shofar mikatzer v'chatzotzrot ma'arichin shemitzvot hayom b'chatzotzrot. They would blow a combination of these silver trumpets and the shofar. So as opposed to Rosh Hashanah in the Mikdash, when they would blow, even in the Beit HaMikdash, they blew chatzotzrot, these silver trumpets as well. But the silver trumpets were kind of there to just accompany the sound. They were the warm-up act, as it were, for the sound of the shofar. And Ben, are you waving your hand?
Yeah, no. Actually, okay. Shalom Primus.
Okay, so tell Shalom he should contact tech support for Web Yeshiva. I can't help him while I'm simultaneously teaching.
No, but apparently the host has to let him in.
Yeah, I know. tell him to contact tech support for Web Yeshiva. I'm not sure how to.
Okay, I get it.
No, I'm not sure. He entered in the wrong way. He has to go in through. But let him tell him to contact tech support from Web Yeshiva. And folks, by the way, if you wave your hands on the video, I'm not necessarily looking at your video, so waving your hands isn't useful. If you have something to say, unmute yourself. But only unmute yourself if you have something significant to say. So the Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah says that on Rosh Hashanah they would blow a bit on the Chatzotzrot and they would go weiter and further and longer in the shofar, because the main thing, of course, the essence of the blowing on Rosh Hashanah is with the shofar. On Ta'anit, it's the mirror image. There was shofar blown. Again, this is only discussing the blowing in Beit HaMikdash. But the main thing for blowing on the fast days were these chatzotzrot, these trumpets that were blown. The sound of the chatzotzrot were longer because that's the main part of the mitzvah of blowing on Ta'anit in Beit HaMikdash. So the Braisa here in Rosh Hashanah on the next Amud, the Braisa says that this is only ever in the Beit HaMikdash. Outside of the Beit HaMikdash, shofrot were not used in combination with the chatzotzrot when blowing on a ta'anit. And chatzotzrot were not used when shofar was used. As after all, we all still know about blowing the shofar on a shoshanah, but we've never seen the blowing of the chatzotzrot together, except for people that go to the demonstrations of the Machon HaMikdash. We never see the blowing of the chatzotzrot ever, and certainly not in combination with the shofar. So it seems from the Mishnah and the Braisa here in Rosh Hashanah.
Rabbi Sachs.
Yes, Yehudi.
I was just saying that Tanakh has some.
Okay, Yehudi, hold off. Hold off, yes. Please. Yehudi, please hold off on that. I made a point of saying that we're talking about current practice. So just hold off a second. So it seems clear from the Gemara.
You meant it never happened.
No, I said none of us are familiar today. Bezman hazeh, okay, with this practice. So Yehudi, I'm muting you again. So it seems clear from the Gemara Rosh Hashanah that the mitzvah of blowing on a tanit outside of Beit HaMikdash is to blow only chatzotzrot and never to blow the shofar. So until now, we've explained this whole discussion of shofar blowing on Ta'anit as talking about a shofar, just like we know about it on Rosh Hashanah. So why does the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah say, why does our Gemara rather in Ta'anit say that shofrot are blown on Ta'anit, when the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says that really we should be blowing chatzotzrot and never shofar on Ta'anit? And if that's the case, doesn't that seem to contradict our Gemara, which says that we learn the whole thing from Yericho, where clearly they were blowing shofar and not chatzotzrot? So there's a few different answers given to this question, some of which seem rather counterintuitive to what we've said and, you know, are certainly foreign to our own experience. The Ritva in Ta'anit says that when our Gemara discusses shofar on Ta'anit, it's really actually talking about chatzotzrot. The Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph says that there are all types of, the Gemara lists, David, maybe you're familiar with this Gemara, that just like we know in contemporary language, there are all types of words that change meaning over time. So the Gemara in Shabbos says that the words shofar, meaning the ram's horn, and chatzotzrot, a metal trumpet, got switched at some point after Chorban HaBayit. Now, in our day, clearly the word shofar, and it doesn't mean that the word shofar, you can't point to the word shofar someplace in this period And it never meant the original meaning of a ram's horn. Clearly, there are always going to be counterexamples. And clearly, if that was the case, if the Gemara in Shabbat is right, that after Churban HaBayit, the word shofar comes to mean metal trumpet, obviously, it's switched back, because now, Pokchazi Venira, everybody knows the word shofar means ram's horn. Nobody would think that a shofar is a metal trumpet. But the Gemara says apparently for a certain period of time, the two words got confused, the meanings changed. And the word shofar, stam, could have been used to identify the Chatzotzra.
If you're talking about you know, Atirat Shamim, and you're talking about Chatzotzra, so you're talking just a generic Chatzotzra, not necessarily the one that was in the Beit Mikdash.
That's possible. That's possible. Oh, shalom, welcome, you made it. So that's why the Gemara says, so the Ritva says, that's why the Gemara refers to, our Gemara says shofar, but is really talking about chatzotzrot. Because on Ta'anit, they would blow a chatzotzrot. Now we, our custom is we don't blow nothing, not chatzotzrot of metal, not shofar of ram's horn, not chatzotzrot meaning, not shofar meaning chatzotzrot. We don't blow anything on Ta'aniyot, because we don't have these Ta'aniyot anymore. But the Ritva says, when our Gemara and Tanit talks about blowing the shofar, really it's talking about the chatzotzra, which after all is the essential type of blowing for a fast day. And the Ritva says that's why, the Ritva says that in our day, meaning already in the medieval period, the custom is not to sound any tekiot on ta'aniot, because when the Gemara talks about blowing a shofar on a ta'anit, it's really talking about a chatzotzra. And since the chatzotzrot have been lost, minus the folks at the Machon HaMikdash who think they've figured out how to reconstruct all of those temple musical instruments, since we don't know neither to craft nor to properly sound the chatzotzra, so therefore the custom or the halacha of blowing them on the fast days have been canceled. Now the Chasam Sofer, a long time after the Ritva, the Chasam Sofer in his commentary to the Gemara and Shabbos, which lists these words that whose meanings transfer over time, so he points out that the Chasam Sofer says that the chatzotzrot are always blown for times of trouble, right? That's why we blow the chatzotzrot. Shofar is not generally sounded as a warning of trouble. Even in Yericho, they weren't blown in the same way that we think of blowing on Ta'anit. They were blown in order to arouse Hashem and to come to our defense in the battle and perhaps to frighten the people in Yericho. But the chatzotzrot are a sign for the troubles that happened to the Jewish people. And the shofar, on the other hand, which is most identified, of course, with Rosh Hashanah, is about yontif, is about elevation, is about holiness, is about the call to Hashem. After Churban HaBayit, says the Chasam Sofer, after Churban HaBayit, all of the tzarot that came upon the Jewish people are now for our own benefit. That the bad things that befall the Jewish people have, obviously we don't want them, and obviously we don't wish them upon ourselves, but the advantage of the bad things that befall us in Galut, the bad things that befall us when we're in a post Beit HaMikdash reality, is that they spur us on to tshuva. And since being spurred on to tshuva is the thing most identified with the shofar ram's horn, when they would blow the chatzotzra on a ta'anit, the purpose of which is to respond to calamity, the name shift, the borrowing of the name shofar, which is identified with tshuva, and tacking it onto chatzotzrot, which are identified with responding to catastrophe, makes sense. Because in the gullus reality, the blowing on fast days for calamity also involves a level of tshuva, because that is the proper response to calamity. When things are fine, when things are tranquil, when things are happy, it's not necessarily the case that what?
I was going to say that, you know, I think of Rav Gordon blowing the shofar in the old city. I wonder if maybe he knew the Hatam shofar. I imagine he did. And, you know, you say now we're in a place where the, you know, it's not only about the terrible things happening to us, but it's actually about returning to the original thing of having a...
Because the blowing, the Rav Gorin blowing the shofar after Six Day War, after they go back to the old city, that's not about tshuva per se.
Exactly.
That's about uplift. That's about triumph. That's about... So Yehudi, this responds to the question that you sent me earlier in the week about the confusion between the purposes of shofar. Because here, if we take the Ritva and the Chasam Sofer together, it means that the shofar we've been discussing is not in fact a shofar at all, and therefore there's no confusion against the shofar as depicted in the Tkiat Shofar as depicted in Tanakh and its use here in the Gemara.
The original definition of Chatzotzerah in the Torah was for both for good and for bad.
In other words, it served different purposes. The Chatzotzerah served different purposes. But its blowing on a fast day was a response to calamity.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yep. We can hear you.
I don't think that the shofar on Rosh Hashanah has anything to do with tshuva. Reason being, number one, that the Shemona Esrei and Rosh Hashanah is not exactly short. The Musaf is the longest Shemona Esrei we ever say. And there's not one word in it about doing tshuva, okay? I mean, in the original Shemona Esrei, I'm not talking about few kids that were added in the Middle Ages. In other words, nobody ever thought the blowing of the shofar was for people to hear. It's for Hashem to hear. The original bracha for the shofar wasn't Lishma Kol Shofar. Look in Goldschmidt, you'll see it was either Al Tikiyat HaShofar or Litkoa HaShofar. You know? So the basic point is to get Hashem's attention to the fact that, you know, we've got needs coming up in the forthcoming year, and also to proclaim Hashem as king over all the world. But either one of those are for Hashem's ears, not for ours. You can't find a single source that ties up Rosh Hashanah.
A single source in the Tanakh. A single source in the Tanakh. David, let him finish.
Okay, sorry.
In other words, all I'm saying is, when you're blowing, Rosh Hashanah never had anything to do with Yom Kippur originally. Yom Kippur is closer to Sukkot than it is to Rosh Hashanah. From the Pshat point of view, you could say Yom Kippur should be tied up with Sukkot because Yom Kippur getting the Beis HaMikdash ready for everybody to come on Sukkot. So you clean out the place before all the crowds come in. In other words, Lechatchila, those three holidays were completely separate holidays and they had nothing to do with each other. I don't even think the Mishnah actually proceeds to basically state that the shofar is born on Rosh Hashanah to get our attention and distinguish it to get Hashem's attention.
Okay, Yehudi, that's the point that you made to me in my email. David, you wanted to respond what?
I disagree, respectfully. I think that... The main distinction you need to make when looking about Rosh Hashanah is the distinction made in the Parshat of Achatzotzerah, where it distinguishes between Tkiyah and Shua. It says that in every Rosh Chodesh, you're supposed to do Tkiyah. And Tkiyah is clearly, as Shlomo mentioned, a symbol of the happiness and of Yom Simchat Chaim. It's a happy occasion every Rosh Chodesh. The only Rosh Chodesh that is not a Yom Tkiah is the Rosh Chodesh of the seventh month of Tishrei, we call Rosh Hashanah. That is specifically called in Bamidbar and in Vayikra, Yom Truah. And Truah is a symbol of something really wrong. So if it's a Tzar Tzor Etchem, it's something wrong, that's for us. We are supposed to enter into this mode of feeling that it's a Yom Truah, it's not a regular Rosh Chodesh. Something is wrong, we need to, I mean, it doesn't say Shuvah explicitly, but it's not a regular day of it's not Rosh Chodesh on steroids. It's something that's actually very different. With to me, that speaks to Shuvah more than anything else. That's supposed to be the feeling we're supposed to have. We would expect, if anything, not to have that. This is the highlight of the harvest season. We're supposed to be at our happiest. And yet it's saying, no, we're going to actually come into a period of tension and of awe.
David, you're going against the Sifrei itself, which says, Uviyom Simchatem is the Megorigalim, Uvamoadechem is Rosh Hashanah.
Okay, well, in all cases,
you're going straight against the Tanaitic Halachic Midrash that understands Uvamoadechem to be Dafka Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Yom Truah?
Okay. In all cases, I mean, David, your biblical root for Shofar and Rosh Hashanah is correct, but it's not quite explicit. It requires us to understand what Truah means. It's not like there's an explicit pasuk, but I think that you're correct. But in all cases, whether or not the meaning of, by the way, not just Rosh Hashanah, any of the Chagim, the meaning of the Chagim evolves from its biblical root to the way it gets developed by Chazal and then passed into medieval Hebrew imagination to modern times, is part of what's fascinating. Why would any of us want to, I mean, after all, none of us are Karaites. Why would any of us want to celebrate, you know, the biblical Rosh Hashanah and not Rosh Hashanah as it's passed to us until now? So even, let's say for the sake of argument, Yehuda, you are correct. We all know the famous Rambam. The Rambam makes it clear, Remez Yeshbo. He's basing himself upon material in Midrash about the symbolism, the meaning of Shofar. But by the time it gets to the hand of the Rishonim, Rosh Hashanah, Shofar is not only about the call to Hashem, it becomes a call back to us, a call to Tshuva. And that's certainly the Shofar. When we hear the Shofar on Rosh Hashanah in Tavshin Pei Bet, that's the Shofar that we hear, the kind of the two-sounded Shofar, the call that goes up and the call that comes back out and down. So shake your head if you want, but that's the way I see it. Now I want to move on back to the Gemara here at the bottom of Yud Dal, the last line in Yud Dal at Omud Beis. The Gemara says, "B'shaneder of Yehuda Nesia havetzara." There was a calamity that afflicted the community in the times of Rabbi Yehuda Nesia. Rabbi Yehuda Nesia is the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Now, to differentiate him from Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbi, the compiler of the Mishnah, we call him Rabbi Yehuda Nesia. He's the grandson of Rabbi. He's the son of Rabban Gamliel. He was the Nasi of the Sanhedrin in Tzipori, up in the Galil. So in his days there was some kind of calamity. Now we're at Yud Dalet Amid Beis. Gazar Tlatesrei Taniot, and he decreed 13 fasts in response to the calamity of his days. Veloine, and they were not answered. The people did tshuva, or they didn't do enough tshuva, but they certainly fasted this cycle of 13 fasts, and they were not responded. Savarle migzar tfei, so he wanted to institute even more fasts. The more the merrier. Omale Rabbi Ami, hare amru ein matrichin et tzibur yoter midai. Tirchud the tzibura. You cannot afflict, oppress, trouble the community more than a certain amount, more, you can't do it excessively, and therefore you cannot add more beyond the 13 fasts that you already instituted. So Omar of Abba Bareder of Chia Baraba, Rabbi Ami de Avad Legarme Huda Avid. Rav Ami, who said you can't add extra fasts, was doing so for his own reasons. Rashi says, where's the Rashi here? Says he was doing it for his own. He was doing it on his own position, that you can't add against. Meaning, he disagreed, because others thought that you could add more fasts. Ela hochi omar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, omar Rabbi Yochanan, lo shanu ela l'gshamim. When we say that you can't add extra fasts, when Rav Ami said you can't add extra fasts because it excessively troubles the community, that goes against the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, who said, lo shanu ela l'gshamim. Not adding extra fasts beyond those prescribed, that's true for fasts regarding drought. That's true for fasts regarding lack of rain. Aval l'shar minei puraniyot mit'anin v'holchin ad she'ye'anu min ha'shamayim. But for other kinds of calamity, plague, war, who knows what, so those you can keep fasting until the calamity abates. I mean, after all, it's true. You can keep fasting. You can always fast. I mean, we saw earlier a discussion about, like, maybe fasting is not such a good idea if people are sick. Because, you know, sometimes you need to eat in order to fight off the disease. So sometimes fasting is counterindicated, as the doctors say. But aside from drought, Rabbi Yochanan says, you should keep fasting, against the opinion of Rav Ami, you should keep fasting until the calamity is taken care of. And, you know, after all, every calamity comes to an end. There is no trauma, and we have no shortage of traumas. We have no shortage of tragedies in the history of the Jewish people, but there's no trauma that hasn't at some point, ultimately, come to an end. So Rabbi Yochanan,
the difference with the drought also is that, unlike another calamity like a plague or something where you just want it to be over, with a drought, the rain if it didn't rain all year for some reason, and then it comes and starts raining in the spring and summer, that's bad. In other words,
David, you're cheating. We know that you prepare the Gemara in advance. We know that you know that in one line, that's exactly what the Gemara is going to say. So, you know, you're just showing off, right? By giving away the fact that you prepared the Gemara in advance. Everybody should take a model from David and prepare the Gemara in advance before the shiur. It would elevate the quality of the shiur. So the Gemara says, Tanya nami hochi kesha amru shalosh ukesha amru sheva lo amru ela l'gshamim. So there's a braita that says this explicitly. The cycles of fast, the specific cycles of fast, that was talking about specifically rain. Aval shar minei puraniyot mit'anin v'holchin ad she'anu. In other words, the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan is validated by this braita. Lema te'ave tiufta de Rav Ami. So this should be a knockout punch to Rav Ami, because there's a braita that says for other calamities, like the calamity that took place in the days of Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, you can keep adding fasts. We don't say tircha de tzibur, you shouldn't add more. So Omar lecha Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Ami responds, Tanaihi, it's a machloket tanaim. It's not a knockout punch because there's a Tanaitic source that goes like me. Detanya ein gozrin yoter mishlosh esrei taniyot al hatzibur lefi she'ein matrichin et hatzibur yoter midai. Divrei Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. So he says, okay, you remember I always say it's like poker. You have two Amoraim fighting it out. Can you add extra fasts or not? So one says you can add extra fasts like Rabbi Yochanan, except in the case of rain. And Rav Ami pulls out a card that says you can't add extra fasts. You can't ask. You can't add extra fasts. So lo min Hashem huze. Right? Rashi says lo min Hashem huze she'ein ze hatam. Right? That's not the reason. The source that Rav Ami brought, right, is not the reason. Ela mipnei sheyatzaz mana shel revi'a. And this is presumed, David, this is presumably where you prepared up to. Right? No, the reason you can't add extra fasts in the rainy season, for the lack of the rain in the rainy season, is that at a certain point, no matter how dry the drought is, you don't want it to rain. Because if it starts raining in the spring and summer, it's going to ruin the crops. So no matter how much you wanted rain all winter, this is, of course, a reference to the climate of Eretz Yisrael, at a certain point, you don't want the rain to come. So that's why you don't add extra fasts to the rain fasts, but to other calamities, you can add fasts. So now here's an interesting question, which we alluded to in the past, of the reality that the Gemara, the Mishnah and the Gemara, even the Gemara of Bavel, has an Eretz Yisrael-centric focus on climatology. Right? Here in Eretz Yisrael, it rains in the winter, it doesn't rain in the summer. And the agriculture is such that that's the way it's supposed to be. Drought at the wrong time and rain in the wrong time. Rain in the wrong time is as bad as drought in the wrong time. But that's not true everywhere. All of us grew up.
By the time you're finished with 13...
Yeah.
By the time you're finished with 13 fasts, if you don't fast during Hanukkah, then it means that you're harder Shabbat already. Just calculate it and you'll see.
Said 7 weeks.
Well, you're not doing it during Hanukkah, I'm sure, so it's really 8 weeks.
Okay. So Shvat, you still want rain in Shvat. You can still have rain in Adar.
Right, but I'm saying it's clear that you're not praying to rail Malkosh. Okay. It's just Malkosh already at that point.
I'm saying it, but you would still want it at that point.
Well, it's clear that it doesn't want it. You just said that.
No, you don't want it. You don't want it into Nisan.
Right, but I'm saying when he says Yatzaz Manah Shel Revi'a, he means the first rain. The one in the Tanakh is called the Yoreh.
I'm not sure. I think Revi'a here means the rainy season, the general rainy season.
We'll do some work on that word.
Okay.
You go ahead.
Even if you were in a situation in a part of the country where rain in June would be okay, we don't make prayer requests for things that are against nature. It isn't natural there to say to have rain. It's not the right time to request rain, because rain doesn't belong to June. It doesn't belong to
All right, but Bechol Zot, in other words, Bechol Zot, it's not just unnatural, it could be damaging.
It could be damaging, but it depends on what crops you're growing.
Yeah, I think the main crop they're always concerned with is wheat. The main crop, wheat is, I mean, it's true. There's lots of things, lots of food, but wheat is the cash crop in the sense that you have bread, you don't have bread. Bread is the staff of life, as it were. So, and here's a shayla. Shalchule bei Ninveh l'Rabbi. The people of Ninveh, whether this is Ninveh of Sefer Yonah, the Ninveh of Sefer Yonah is apparently in Iraq today. It's a place that gets almost no rain all year long and certainly never in the summer. It's not clear that this is talking about that Ninveh, or perhaps it's a different place, Ninveh, or maybe there's a different girsa in the Gemara, that it's a place called Naveh, like Naveh Daniel. So the exact location of this place is not our concern right now, but it's not clear that this is the biblical Ninveh of Sefer Yonah. So they sent a question, they sent a shayla to Rabbi. Anan, Aftafilu b'tkufat Tammuz bo'in in mitra hechinaved. We, in our place, in our world, in our climate, wherever it is, we need rain even in the summer. There are places where a drought, you can have, here in Israel, we can't have a drought in the summer because it never rains. So the lack of rain doesn't create a drought. But there are places in the world where the crops are such that it requires summer rain. So we, even in Tkufat Tammuz, even in the summer, require rain. What are we supposed to do about fasting and davening and etc.? The whole cycle of rain, the whole cycle of fasting and davening is, of course, oriented around the climate of Eretz Yisrael. But what about us, where we are, where we need summer rain? Kichidin demeinin o kirabin demeinin. Should we be considered like individuals? An individual can always add something into his or her Shmona Esrei. An individual can always add in a private request into his or her Shmona Esrei in Shomea Tfila. Or are we like a Tzibur? Are we like Rabim? And therefore we should be adding it in the bracha of Birkat HaShanim, in the bracha of Mivarech HaShanim. As ki yachidim deminin, kushamea uveshamea tfila, o ki rabim deminin uvebirkat HaShanim. Shlach lehu, ki yachidim demetu, demetu, uveshamea tfila. And he writes to them, you folks in Chutz Laretz, wherever you are, you are not like a tzibur. Even though, I don't know, maybe it's 5,000 yidden work in the fields there in Nineveh, wherever you are. But you are not a tzibur. You are 5,000 individuals in need of rain. And therefore, you should add in the request for rain in Shomea Tfila, the catch-all request place for any individual request, because rain in the summer is not something that the Tzibur asks. So the Gemara says Meitve. The Gemara attacks this idea, attacks this position of Rabbi from Braita. Omer of Yehuda, Eimatai. When does all of this whole thing about when you daven for rain, when does this apply? Bizman shehashanim ketikunan v'Yisrael shruyin al admatan. That's talking about when things are the way they're supposed to be, when the years are as they're supposed to be, when the Jewish people are not living in in exile, they're residing on their own homeland in Eretz Yisrael. Aval bizman hazeh, after Churban HaBayit, hakol lefi hashanim v'hakol lefi hamikomot, hakol lefi hazman. So he says, no, it's every man for himself. During Golus, if there's a community in Nineveh or wherever they are, and they need the rain then, so then they should daven for the rain. And they should put it in the place that a community would put it in, Mivarech HaShanim. Amar lei, matnita ramet alei de Rabbi? Rabbi, tanahu ufalig. So here we have a braisa against a statement of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. So normally, who would win? So this is a kind of parenthetical operative statement. What was Rabbi's status? Was Rabbi the codifier of the Mishnah? Was he the last Tana, or was he the first Amora? In other words, can Rabbi argue with a Braita? So here you have a Meitve, a statement of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, against a Braita. So if Rabbi's just another Amora, even though the earliest Amora you can get, he's the first guy to show up at the Amora convention, so then he cannot argue on a Braita. So the Gemara says, no, Rabbi has the status of a Tana. In other words, to be clear, these distinctions between a Tana and an Amora, between a Rishon and an Achron, these are types of things that in the moment weren't always clear. And as you don't always know that you've undergone like a periodization, right? In other words, at some point in 100 years from now, people will point to some event. Maybe it'll be 9/11. And 9/11 will be considered a watershed. A lot of it will depend, obviously, on what happens over the next few decades. 9/11 will be considered a watershed event that after which the world was transformed. But we all remember 9/11, as traumatic as that day was, whether you were there in New York or you were watching it from afar. You weren't necessarily aware. You were aware that something traumatic was occurring, but you weren't necessarily aware that you were standing on the borderline between historic periods. Even the Machaber, even Rav Yosef Karo, in writing the Shulchan Aruch, which presumably he thought was a very significant work that he dedicated many years to, was not aware that he was defining the borderland between the Rishonim and the Achronim. After all, everybody is modern. Everyone in their own day is cutting edge, right? You know, the first caveman that rubbed two sticks together, you know, he just founded a startup in whatever the equivalent of Stone Age Silicon Valley was, right? This was modernity. We look at it as, you know, the height of primitivity. Everybody in his own moment is on the edge of history, right? Wondering what's going to come next. So Rabbi was like this. Rabbi, even though, like Yosef Karo, who writes the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi in his day, in compiling the Mishnah, is on this borderland. But the Gemara says Rabbi still has the authority of a Tana, and he can argue against the Enochinami. There's an argument here between a Braisa and a position of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, but Rabbi Yehuda Nasi has broad enough shoulders that he can argue against a Braita. It's not meaning it doesn't constitute any regular Amora arguing against a Braita, unless there's something unusual or the Gemara is going to pull a rabbit out of its hat to explain to us why there's not really a Machlokas. He's dead in the water. An Amora normally cannot argue against a Braita, or certainly not a Mishnah, right? But here, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, it's not a knockout punch. It's not a knockout punch. So ma have alo? What's the maskona? What's the conclusion? Rav Nachman amar bevirchat hashanim. Rav Sheshet amar b'shomea tfila. So the machloket tanayim continues as a machloket amoroyim. V'hilchata b'shomea tfila. The halacha is that those people in Ninveh or wherever they are who need rain in the summer can daven for it, but they do so as a collective of individuals, not as a tzibur, and they put it into their bracha of shomea tfila. Now there's a question, because the Gemara in Masechet Avodah Zarah says that when any individual needs to, let's say, daven for parnasa. So where do you insert your private bakasha for a little help with your bank account? You do it in the bracha of Mivarech Hashanim. So why are these people, even if it's a collective of 5,000 farmers in Ninveh, why do we say that they're not a tzibur, they're only a group of 5,000 individuals, and therefore they cannot insert their request for rain in Mevarech HaShanim. They have to do it as individuals in Shomea Tfila. But Manav Shach, anybody on any given day of the year, can daven for parnosa in Mivarech HaShanim? So the answer is that when it comes to rain, rain is different. If I need a little parnosa, we don't live in a zero-sum world, right? That's the way economy works. So a matter of fact, my doing better financially is theoretically, depending upon what line of business I'm in. I mean, if I'm a thief, if I'm the town thief, and I make my living by putting my hand in other people's pockets, so my doing better financially is in your disinterest. But that's not what we're talking about. Normally speaking, any one person's financial betterment is theoretically in the advantage of the entire community. Because of like a sense of trickle-down economics, I'll spend more money. If I have more money and you're the shoemaker and you're the butcher and you're the baker and you're the woodchopper, I'm going to spread my wealth around, right? Or if I live in a taxed economy, I'm going to be contributing more to the common weal, and that money goes to pay for everybody's street lamps and communal well, and public education and whatnot. Right? Generally speaking, my financial growth is in everybody's interest. So if I daven for parnosa and I do better, that doesn't hurt anybody else. But rain is tricky. It could be that I have a need for rain at the moment. But rain not in its proper time can be damaging to other people, depending upon what you do and how your house is constructed and all types of other things. So asking for rain, not when it normally is needed, cannot be done in the bracha of Mivarech HaShanim. Because I cannot daven for my financial betterment if it's going to mean potentially damaging other people. Right? The ganef who makes his money pickpocketing cannot daven that he should have tomorrow. He's got to get up early. You know how it is. The alarm goes off in the morning, time to make the donuts, time to pick the pockets. He cannot daven to Hashem forget the fact that his very form of making a living is itself biblically prohibited. But he cannot daven that he should have good luck tomorrow on the job as a pickpocket when him doing well is a zero-sum game. Every dollar that he earns is a loss to someone whose pocket has been picked. But that's not a normal example. Normally speaking, everybody's financial betterment contributes to the common weal. But if davening for rain, I need rain, you know, in my crops, but it's going to cause damage or wreak havoc elsewhere, so that's not something I can put into a bracha which somehow is connected to the communal need. I can daven for it in Shomea Tfilah as an individual, but not as a member of the larger community.
Rabbi Sachs?
Yes, Rabbi Yehudi Feldman.
Doesn't the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur pray that Hashem should not listen to the tefillot of Ovrei Drachim because they're going to pray that rain shouldn't fall and we want rain to fall?
Yeah, okay. That's a good example. That's a good proof of what I just said. Okay, we have a couple more minutes. Let's just do a drop more. It's a new small sugya. The Mishnah says, "B'sheni matirim chashecha uvachamishi kol hayom mipnei kavod Shabbat." So during this cycle of fasts, Monday, Thursday, so on the latter, one of the stringencies that get added in the latter cycle is that we close commerce, right? We, you know, like think about it, the mall, like the mall is like a kef place to go, right? So like on Yom HaZikaron here, we close the mall. Right? We close restaurants. Right? The shuk closes. I happen to be in Machane Yehuda on you know, the minutes before Yom HaZikaron, like late in the afternoon on Yom HaZikaron. I had to go do an errand there late that afternoon. And you get there, and everything, you know, Machane Yehuda, besides Shabbos, when do you see Machane Yehuda closed? Right? But the store, all the bastot are closed and the stores are closed. There was like one falafel shop that was still open, you know, and I guess everybody that needed their last falafel, the last something to eat, was standing on line there, right? So, okay, so on these fast days, they would close the shops. However, it wasn't an absolute closure. On Monday, the Mishnah says, on Mondays, on Mondays, you could open the stores a little bit towards nightfall because people had to come and buy. You know what stores we're talking about? We're not talking about clothing stores or bookstores. We're talking about makolet. We're talking about fruits and vegetables. We're talking about meat and fish, right? So on Mondays, they would open the stores a little bit towards the end of the day in order to allow people to come and buy food that they needed in order to break their fast. And on Thursday, you could leave the store open. You could leave the store open all day because of Kavod Shabbos. On Thursdays was the market day. People had to buy their food for Shabbos. So Iboiluhu is an information question. Heichi katane, right? What does this Mishnah mean? B'sheni matinim chashecha uvechamishi kol hayom b'pnei kvod Shabbat odilma b'sheni matin uvechamishi potchin kol hayom kulo. So, like, what does it mean? Like, on Monday, does it mean on Monday you keep the shop open potchin? You open the shop a little bit towards nightfall, but on Thursday you also open it up just a little bit. But you do so. When we say open up, do we mean you're open for business, or do we mean you open that you had like a trice, right? You know, you're the door wouldn't be wide open, you know, like you come in, you're a shop owner, you come in the morning, you open the door, you put out the sign, yes, we're open, right? You know how it is, like sometimes you're running into the shop, like the shop closes at around 7, but it doesn't exactly close at 7. You get there at 7:01 and they're still there, but you know, they're closing up and you say, oh, I just need one thing. And I say, okay, hurry up. Is that what it means? Does it mean like the shop is technically open, but the trice is like halfway down so that it's open, but it's not grand open, to show that it's a fast day, to show that it's a serious day, to show that it's, you know, we're open, but only for the essential services. Or does it mean on Mondays it's only open a little bit, and on Thursdays it's open completely? So tashma. So listen to this. Listen to the source, which will answer our question. Tashma. Titania. B'sheni matin ad ha'erev. On Monday, they open the shop a little bit until the evening. Uvechamishi potchin kol hayom kulo mipnei kvod Shabbat. Meaning, the stores are always open both on Monday and Thursdays. On Monday, the shop is open, but it's not fully open, right? Maybe they're not playing music, or maybe they don't hang out the sale signs. But the door is unlocked. You can go in. But they're not out there drawing in the business. And on Thursday, it's open as regular in order because of Kavod Shabbat. Hayulo shnei ptachim. And if it was a store with two entrances, potech echad v'noel echad. One would be open. Customers can come in. But it's not open for regular. But there's some kind of visible sign that commerce is being cut back a little bit, even though technically the store is open. Hayalo itstaba keneged pitcho. If there was a kind of platform, think about, you know, like a lot of shops here in Israel, even indoor shops, but certainly outdoor shops. Think of like the shopping center in most of us live here in Efrat, so the shopping center in Dekel, you know, like Super Deal and the supermarket, they have like certain stands that they put outside the store, the clothing store. They put racks outside the store, which is, I guess, a way of drawing in business and things like that. So if you have this, stand outside of the shop, the itztaba, poteach kedarko ve'eno choshesh. So you can open your store in a regular way, with no worry. Right, because then, there are different explanations given. One is that then it's clear what you're selling, right? It's clear, like if it's a restaurant, if it's a cafe, right? So you shouldn't have, so maybe you should be only open for takeaway, right? People can take away food to go eat at home after the fast. But if you have tables out there and people are sitting and eating and drinking, that's not proper on a fast day. If it's a kind of store where you have things out front and the front door is blocked, right? So that's a similar way of kind of not having like a grand entrance to things. So that's the end of that sugya. The Gemara next, which we'll pick up next week, the Gemara next goes back to this question of like, what happens if you do all this fasting and still you're not answered? And that's where we'll pick up next week. Okay. Todah rabah.